Many of Ajahn Chah's direct disciples have become revered teachers themselves. Would you say the harsher conditions and more rigorous practices of the early days of Wat Pho Phong played a necessary role in their training and development? Or was it mostly due to Ajahn Chah being such a masterful teacher? I think, again, Ajahn Chah would never lift himself up. And, you know, of course, it's one of the reasons why he was so inspiring, I think. You know, the conditions in the early days of Wat Pho Phong were certainly helpful. But, you know, it's just, sometimes you know, there's this nostalgia for the good old days. And that's a, to me, it's a fallacy or a fantasy. You know, if I only had the good old days, had conditions like the good old days, then I'd really be free of suffering. But the reality is, we were all suffering then. It wasn't as if we were really diligent and really penetrating the Dhamma. We were just, you know, just muddling along, trying to get by the same as everybody else is. And because the problem is not in the condition. I mean, if you complicate conditions too much, yeah, I mean, that can be an obstacle. But the there was no you know, things were rigorous and simple because there was no choice to that. I mean, there was just the, you know, the northeast of Thailand was very undeveloped and I think it is what is important is that the you know, people internalize the teaching and the training, and those monks or those monastics who have internalized the training, they're able to speak with some authority and gain some kind of confidence with others. I mean, there's also the reality that say that, you know, those it's like the, you know, the big trees in a forest, the big tree has to fall down for the small trees to grow up. And you know, with Ajahn Chah becoming ill and passing, that many of his other disciples started to display their abilities. But it's what the reason why they are displaying, because they internalize the practice, and those who are waiting for some divine inspiration or some or just say stubbornly holding to the form for some reason or another, it doesn't inspire people. So there. So learning how to, and in the same way in the time of the Buddha, the great disciples were all, they had different temperaments and personalities, and different people would be drawn to them. So the same way, and say the disciples and students of Ajahn Chah, and then as it continues on or into this, getting into you know, we're definitely moving into the next generation after the direct disciples of Ajahn Chah already. And, you know, different teachers are starting to manifest in different ways, and it's I think it's quite natural. But I think that to me, what is important is not so much the external conditions as the willingness to internalize the prana. And that's something for everybody to be reflecting on, whether it's people who are in positions of beginning to teach, or have been teaching for a while, or been in positions of leadership, or within the lay community. And just how do we internalize this? Which is, it goes all the way back to, you know, say the characteristics of the Dhamma we chanted, the open aiko, leading inwards. It's this Dhamma of the Buddhas has to be drawn into the heart. And you know, it's important to keep doing that, being able to and Ajahn Chah was a masterful teacher for sure. But it's very rare that you get somebody who is, you know, as kind of complete as Ajahn Chah. But you know, you can't expect that of others. It's just, you know, it is very rare to. You know, even amongst the the great disciples of Ajahn Mun, who Ajahn Chah is really a minor character in the disciples of Ajahn Mun, because he was Mahanikaya, so never lived with him for a very long period of time, and he didn't. And because of that, he was only a short time with Ajahn Mun, but it was a very important meeting that Ajahn Chah always carried with him. He dreamt of Ajahn Mun for years and years and years after. He's had this inspiration of faith. Ajahn Chah, his ability to teach, and ability to inspire lay people, ability to inspire monastics, both monks and nuns. I mean, Wapapong community there was almost always almost an equal number of monks and nuns, and, you know, 50, 60, 70 monks, 50, 60, 70 nuns. For us as monks, we'd never see them, but they were there, and they were living and practicing. It was northeast of Thailand, but being able to inspire communities, and then to be able to lay a foundation that was carried on, is really exceptional. It's really the norm that, you know, you have a teacher who inspires people and has a community of sorts, smaller or a little bit larger. But oftentimes, once that teacher passes away, then you know, people go in their different directions, and the monastery is pretty much empty. But say Ajahn Chah has not been teaching since the early 1980s, and he died in 1992. That's, you know, 40 years of him not being directly involved, and Wapapong is still a thriving monastery and community. It's very exceptional. So yeah, there is something unique and masterful. But a lot of it was him kind of encouraging and empowering others to rise up as well.